Welcome to Piercing the Veil on BBSRadio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey, and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
Greetings, world. This is your host, Jordan. Welcome back to another episode of Piercing the Veil. Today is July 24th, 2016, and I am flying solo. Our guest had some scheduling issues again. We are determined to get him back on, so don't worry about that. We will speak about the foreclosure issue. So if you were calling in to listen about that, we also have some property solutions that we'll be speaking into today. But it's regarding something different, using trust vehicles instead of certified audits to protect the property. So basically, Corey's in Italy right now. He'll be trying to get on as soon as possible. If not, I will continue the show solo because I'm a ninja like that. And so basically what I'll start with is, what is a trust? And we've talked about this in previous episodes, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse for you. But I do want to say this. There's exceptions to trusts, but most of them consist of a contract. It's called an indenture, and it basically governs or binds the performance of the parties, including what's known as a trustee. Okay? So you have the trust, which is the vehicle itself. It's sort of like a corporation or an LLC. It's a little bit different, and it can be utilized in many different ways. Not necessarily free of regulation, but unrestrained of most, if that makes sense. It will generally consist of two or three parties determining, which one is going to have the value that's being conveyed and which one's going to receive it and who's going to take care of it. Basically, the indenture that we mentioned, or the contract of the trust, will set forth the respective rights and duties of each party. It's also going to state the jurisdiction of the trust, where it was formed. You'll generally see some of these things in what's known as an articles of incorporation, for like a regular corporation or an LLC. It's very similar, okay? But there has to be some form of declaration, and this could actually be verbal. You can do all this verbally. If you can prove and have records that you held minutes with the other parties, that actually constitutes the body of the trust, aside from what you're originally putting in there. So let's get to that. What you're basically doing is you're removing personal ownership. As somebody who puts something into a trust, you remove your personal ownership from it in most cases. Again, there's exceptions, and I don't really recommend those types, like the living trusts and stuff like that, or revocable trusts. Those are Google terms that will get you some more info on those things. Basically, what you're doing is you're removing the personal ownership of a valuable thing in your life, and therefore you can then protect it easier and with more layers of security from any type of damage or intrusion or harm that may normally come to it in the ordinary course of living. What I mean by that is, say, for example, your vehicle is in a trust. If somebody goes and they hit the car, or anything happens as would normally happen with a car, you have a little bit of an expanded region to go after that. So you don't necessarily have to go through a personal insurance. The trust can come in as the owner. If it's privately insured through the trust, you can do that as well. But you can actually go in there and take the value of the car and use it in a way that you wouldn't be able to if you're mitigating your loss through insurance agencies. There's all sorts of different things that are happening. There's a whole realm of things you can do with the trust, but for the most part, it's keeping it safe from removal. So you don't want a creditor or, you know, the government or the tax man or whoever is coming after you to be able to even see it at most times, let alone take it from you. And that's what a trust vehicle is very, very good at. Now, there's a lot of guru guys that will tell you to set up a private trust without letting the IRS know and don't involve any government agencies, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, there might be some merit to that. That's already been done by some of the most powerful families in the world. When I say powerful, I just mean monetarily, for whatever that's worth. And those guys are using privately set up trusts. The Vatican was started, and the state of Rome was started using centuries or thousands of years old trust, I should say. So there's a number of different things that have that model, but they're used by people who already have a massive wealth or a massive networking or a massive infrastructure. They can then go to set up different types of companies and LLCs, and the people that are working for the trust are able to go in there and act out their public duties in other capacities. That's why that works for them. If you're not a Rockefeller or a Rothschild or one of these guys, the chances of you setting up a private trust with no registration, no recognition, no ID or identification in the public, no bank account, using Bitcoin, whatever, right? The chances of you enforcing any claim for that trust are slim to none, because you don't have the network, you don't have the wealth, you don't have the enforcement behind it. It's just, I would liken it to the police state. You know, obviously they have the monopoly over security of persons because of their numbers and their infrastructure, and that was built up over time, obviously. So the trust is used to protect personal property, remove it from seizure, access, remove it from public view in some cases, but most of the time, people will be using this more commonly to mitigate their taxes. Okay, so I'll speak into that later, the tax issue, but basically what I want to talk about now is the parties. Because who you are in the trust really, really matters, okay? So you could be a grantor or a trustor or a settlor. All three terms mean basically the same thing. You are somebody who is giving a piece of property up to another. Now, when you're doing this, you're giving it to somebody who's known as the trustee, okay? So the grantor, settlor, you know, any of those people, whatever titles you have for that person, I should say, that will convey the property to the trustee because it's someone he trusts, or he or she trusts, to hold that property in good faith. Now, here's the difference between a regular agreement or a contract, if you will, between parties. You know, one party could contract to give property over to another to hold. It's done all the time. And in the financial world, there's things called called a novation, I should say. And those are where you give up your debts over to somebody and assign them fully. So there's reflections, if you will, of what a trust agreement is in the regular world. But when you give something up in a trust to somebody else, that person who holds it is only holding part of the title. They only get the legal control over the thing. They don't have the equitable use or possession, in most cases, of that item. So whether it be your car, your house, what have you, it goes for the benefit of another. So now we have the third party, the beneficiary. So we're recapping. We have the settlor, grantor, right? It's different names depending on what exactly you're exchanging or what the purpose of the trust is. That's one party. Then we have the second party, which is the most crucial, I should say, the trustee, the person who is trusted to do their job, the person who is trusted above their own personal gain or wealth or ends or, you know, agendas to hold, maintain, and improve that property value. Not just keep it, but improve it. Because 9 times out of 10, the indenture is going to say that he's required to do so, he or she. Okay, so the indenture is what governs what the trustee is allowed to do, what he's supposed to do, what the purpose of the trust is, and also it states who the beneficiaries are, which is the third party. So this third party here, the beneficiary, is a person who's receiving the benefit. Okay, and I really want to tie in the court example here. Any of our listeners who have been listening to our past shows know that we speak a lot about negotiations and contracts and trust, but we always tie it into the court system because you're going to get a traffic ticket, and God forbid it happens to you now, but at some time in your life, you're going to get a traffic ticket. You're going to deal with a government agency. You're going to deal with a clerk. You're going to deal with somebody of supposed authority in some sort of bureaucratic position, okay? It's going to happen, or it has already happened to you, depending on what stage of life you're in. And when that happens, you must not be the one who's taking benefits, okay? If that corporation or that court or that whatever is providing a benefit to you, whatever they may deem that to be, 3 hots and, you know, and a cot, you know, the ability to be protected from outside influence while you're being charged. You know, there's all these weird, crazy, backwards justifications they have for putting people in jail for nonviolent offenses, but you're deemed to be a beneficiary for all intents and purposes because you receive food, shelter, water, medical care if you need it. And that extends to the daily realm of society, all these different things that you're taking in and availing yourself of. You need to understand that if you're not declaring yourself internally that what your purpose and intent of using that is, and if you're just willy-nilly taking the benefits, you have a duty and an obligation. So after I've explained all these three positions, some people might jump to the fact of, oh, yeah, well, the grantor is a person who lost the property, so they gave something up. And the trustee is a person who holds it, so they've got all the, like, the responsibility. And, ugh, I don't like that. I want to be the beneficiary because he gets the stuff. You know, that's good if you like stuff, but you better like duties and obligations, too, because he who receives benefits is obligated to recompense in exchange. What I mean by that is you're obligated to perform by certain restrictions, duties, or terms. Say, for example, you receive the house under a trust. You may not receive it till you're 18. There's a term that's very common. Or say, for example, the grantor, who might be your grandpa or your parent, knows that you might not have pretty developed common sense by the time you're 12. So the 18 principle is in there. You have to be 18 first of the age of majority. And then also maybe he's added another term that says you need to complete a course on trust, or you need to complete a course on compassion, or what have you, so that you will be legally competent to inherit that property and administer it, and use it properly without putting it at risk. And the beneficiaries may or may not know even that they're entitled to property until it happens, right? There's such a thing as distribution. Any type of trust will set forth the terms of the distribution in the trust, in the indenture specifically. And that could either happen at the death of the grantor, the death of the trustee. It could happen at the end of the trust for however long the life of the trust is, which is typically 10 to 25 years, with an option to renew or what's called pour over the assets into a new trust vehicle with the same name and the same terms, basically. So you can do all that stuff with a trust that you can't do with a corporation. The corporations are taxed to death. Yes, there's a lot of smart attorneys. There's a lot of guys out there that are improving your taxable efficiency. What I mean by that is lowering the amount that's due. Okay. What I liken that to is the fuel economy standards of the United States. They're set at 50%, right? So the scale is not, is this car economical on a fuel scale from 1 to 100%, from the max performance that we can get out of this technology to the lowest. That's not what it is. It's going up to 50% and using that 50% as a 100% cap. This is as far as we can go. And then they rate the efficiencies from there. I liken working within the statutory realm and being under all these restrictions and regulations to that right there. Yes, you can improve on it, but only to a certain extent. You can never go above 50%. If you have a master vehicle, like a trust, that may be identified in the public and may be tied in, you can still utilize all the other lower vehicles like the corporations and the LLCs and the DBAs and the private, sole proprietorships and all these different types of things to do different aspects of trust business. And the trust can hold, make agreements in exchange, hold property. It could give charitable grants out to certain people. It could release property to homeless veterans, which is something that I've actually been starting to do. I have not gotten the process started, but I have all the framework for my trust that will be doing that. You can do all sorts of crazy things with this. And on top of it, you're protected more than you would be if it was in your own name. Generally, because even if you publicly identify a trust, an attorney for a foreclosure firm or the bank or any of these types of situations where your property would be at risk, the attorneys are using, for the most part, template, and they just do standard practice and stuff like that. What that means is, 9 times out of 10, in my experience, they generally overlook the ownership, the true ownership, even if you record it in the public and the county register of the property. So basically, when they sue you personally and they don't realize that stuff has been given over to the trust, well, then all of a sudden, now you have a right to, for lack of standing, to motion to dismiss. And you can get that case thrown out. And you know what? They could bring that case against the trust again, but it's going to cost them all those legal fees over again. It's going to cost them a whole new set of paralegal hours, which basically means that all their paralegals are going to spend a lot of hours researching and resetting and doing all these other things. They could just change the name and file again, but then, the trust has other options. So there's a whole host of benefits that you have that will jam people up right off the start, or right off the starting line, I should say, who are coming for your property. Okay. Now let's talk about the parties again. Now we have the settlor, grantor, and we also have the trustee, and we have the beneficiary. And we know those roles. The grantor, the settlor gives stuff up. to the trustee to hold for the benefit of the beneficiary. The beneficiary has certain obligations on the use of that, whether it be, you know, he has free and clear use, but he's got to wait till he's 18, or he has to take certain courses first. It just depends. Now, what we also have is outside parties that the trust would do business with. And this is something I'm real excited about because there's something called the exchangeor. The exchangeor comes in with a valuable piece of property, and it's sort of like a second grantor. He, at the mercy of the trust, basically, he can exchange a piece of property if he finds the terms that the trust is giving him are valuable, right? So he can exchange something and be a participant and get equitable value in the trust by the issuance of shares. Or perhaps he gets to name a beneficiary at a certain share distribution rate. Does that make sense? So, basically, what we have here is outside parties that can add to the value of the trust. Now, when that happens, you get something going on which is called growth, rapid growth and expansion. And the trustee is required to make his job as simple as possible. So it doesn't make sense for him to continue adding on beneficiaries with exchangers. Maybe he should give some sort of share in exchange for, you know, distribution that happens every 10 years of the trust assets, right? Maybe he should do something else like that, or exchange some rights, titles, and interests in some trust property for exchange of rights, titles, and interest in some personal property of the exchanger. These are things or considerations that the trustee has to take into account, okay? Because as the life of the trust goes on and it grows and the liabilities grow, more and more people, more and more beneficiaries would have access to pierce the trust or penetrate the trust. Right? The name of our show is Piercing the Veil for a reason. It's not just esoteric. It has to do with protection from piercing, right? But when we want to go learn about something, we're the ones doing the piercing. And so we're very good at it because we know how to protect from it. So we understand the mentality of people trying to hide valuable information. And essentially what you're doing is hiding valuable information from the public when you put up a trust for protection of assets. And it's not illegal, it's not unlawful. And in fact, when we get to taxes here later, I'll speak into the fact that the IRS has recognized multiple times that paying taxes is completely 100% voluntary. The moment you file that first tax return, tax form, anything, reporting on yourself and giving them information, you've enabled a trust in a contract agreement with them whereby you're now a taxpayer. There's a lot of people that will argue with me on that, but it's just simply the case. There's too much evidence to point to it. There's the IRS directors from multiple different years on live television saying that the payment of taxes are voluntary. Okay. I believe even Senator Harry Reid made a statement of like fashion in a congressional hearing recently. Now, on top of that, if you're doing a lot of business in the public and there's things that you want to report because you have a lot of expenses, and if you're engaging with the IRS and you can do it competently, there's a lot to be said for doing that. I know there's a lot of gurus out there, and we'll talk about that later, but you can get an EIN number and be just fine and manage your taxes just as you would any other entity and still recoup the benefits, I should say. Okay. Now, so we've talked about parties in the trust. We've talked about what you can do with it. We've talked about certain uses that it's commonly used for. We've talked about outside parties that come in and exchange value and what considerations the trustee has to take into account. Now what I want to talk to is protection. Okay, I want to speak into protection. And I'm taking a drink of water there if it's just me solo. When you're protecting something, you always want to look 5 years into the future. In 5 years, what's the state of the state government that I'm living in? In 5 years, am I still going to be in this state? In 5 years, will the police state have risen so bad to such a degree that in other countries, now we have it in this country, that my property can just be taken by force and somebody can just storm over my gate, right? All these different types of things. What are the regulations on business heading towards? What are the housing market looking towards? You know, there's all sorts of trends that can be predicted by very competent people, and you can find them by just Googling. Internet has become such a powerful tool that is no longer questionable as to the, you know, I will say this. You got to be careful. There's a lot of dumb bullshit on there. But if you can verify in multiple sources on the internet, it's just the same as a reliable source that any reporter or somebody else would use. It's factual information. Okay? So it's very easy to look all these types of things up and all these concepts that we're speaking of and get a good sense of what's going on and how to protect yourself in less than an hour. Okay? There's no excuses. Listeners, I love you, but you got to start looking things up if you don't know what they are. Start being proactive, right? And then you'll come to a greater understanding for yourself on how to protect everything in your life, not just your personal property, even your body. Okay. Protection. I did a little recap for you. Protection. Layers of trust or layers of entities, right? We speak a lot about, you've probably heard the word trust like 70 times now, but it's important. When you use a trust to protect, you have the ability to make agreements. The trust is a legal entity like a person. It can do anything, there's an exception, but pretty much anything that a regular living person could do. Okay? That person could go make agreements on their behalf, on other people's behalf. They can create entities. So again, the trust can create a trust. You can have a trust that creates a trust that manages the property that the former trust owns, and have the trustee of the first trust be the trustee of the second trust, as long as it's known that that guy or woman is a trustworthy person.
Okay.
So we're also taking callers this show. I'm going to stop on the protection aspect in about 2 minutes and get to a caller that's online right now. I'm going to wrap it up real quick and say, if you layer a trust with another trust, use it as a management company, if you will, and then sublease those rights out to another LLC. This could be people that you work with that have their own businesses that want to be involved. It could be businesses that you create. It doesn't matter. You're creating these layers. And here's the kicker. This is coming back to the foreclosure aspect. If you're in pre-foreclosure and you haven't gotten filed on yet, or they haven't given you a notice or any of these types of things, you have the right to set up a trust very quickly. Do it in your mind. Get the property description and get the proper parties in line and get them on the phone and verbally create it. And it exists at that moment. And then you have all the time you need to write everything out. And then you can sub-layer everything in such a way that when they do come sue you, they're going to have a really, really, really tough time penetrating the first layer and then, again, even getting the case to go forward. Okay? So that's what I talk about when I talk about protection. All right? So with no further ado, we're going to get to our first caller. He might have a comment or a question, and I believe I know this man. He's one of my clients, and this is Claude. Claude, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jordan. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, man. Just flying solo this episode.
Oh, Corey's not on?
No, he's in Italy, and I think his Skype wasn't able to connect. He said he would do his best, but
okay.
No worries. I
All right, cool. Yeah, one of the things that's intriguing about trust to me is the private aspect, and I think it's important to note that all of the super wealthy families, multi-generational, super wealth, these families have all been using trust almost exclusively for generations and generations. And it's what's really attractive to me, I know a little bit about it, is, initially it takes a while to get them generating and, to set them up. It doesn't take much money, but it takes a lot of knowledge, a lot of homework, and all
That's
of
right.
that stuff. But when you're talking about the potential for growth down the road, and it cut just a couple short generations, it's exponential math to the nth degree, where these vehicles can start just accumulating and growing, and it's almost like they can be self-generating after a specific point is reached in the process. So that's one of the things that's really attractive to me. If anyone has children or wants to set that in. And the other aspect of it is, the fracturing of our family units in this country and in recent times, is this is the kind of thing that can bring families together. As you establish a trust and you move forward, and then you and your children grow older and they grow into maturity, you teach them how to handle trust affairs. You teach them about the process and the structure, and they get involved, and they're the beneficiaries. So they have a real, real abiding interest in the health and the welfare of these trusts. And this is what brings, you know, teenagers and senior citizens and people in their middle age all together in the same in the same room and talking and you know, having things that pull them together. So that's another aspect of trust that is extremely attractive that a lot of people, I don't think about.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with everything you're saying. In fact, I touched on some of those points earlier in the show. So you're totally in alignment with that, with what we're talking about. And, you know, the private aspect is attractive. It really is. But the wealth has to be amassed in such a way that it's self-generating, which you spoke into as well. So doing the things in the meantime to get these little trusts for your family and get them involved in repairing the family unit, I see is the most valuable thing, and I'm glad you see that as well. And we're doing that currently for you and your family and myself with the vehicles that we've set up. And I believe that it's given us, both of us, a better insight into what a trust really is, what you can do with it, and the power of it, not just the cursory, you know, well, this is what you can do, and this is the parties, and this is how you do it. We actually get the details of what has to be done and the value that you can see the beneficiary is receiving, all right? And that actually leads me into my next point. And thank you, Claude, for coming on with that. I really appreciate it, and I'll talk to you soon after the show. It was just totally spot on. But my next point that you talked about is the integration of the beneficiaries into the new trust as it pours over in the next 25 years or as the life comes to an end, shifting the guard to a competent or responsible administration. So, again, thank you so much for that. We're going to go to our first commercial break now. When we get back, I'll speak about the tax aspect of trusts. And, Claude, that was very, very awesome. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, you're welcome, bro.
Excellent. All right, we'll go to our first commercial break. We'll be back soon.
Meet Corey, a talented musician, philosophical artist, designer builder, and co-host of Piercing the Veil, a booming radio show which focuses on spreading rare or esoteric knowledge. When he's not doing art, making music, designing, or hosting on the air, Corey is an experienced life coach who specializes in wealth management, preservation, and acquisitions. For a free 15-minute consultation, call 520-230-2332. Or email cr_s@unseen.is with questions or concerns. Expand your possibilities and thrive today.
All right, listeners, welcome back to another episode of Piercing the Veil. Today's show has been about trusts. We were going to have Damien on, but he had some scheduling conflicts. The guy's really super busy. We will have him on eventually because what he has to say is very profound and extremely important. That's what this show is committed to bringing you. It's important, valuable, rare information. So if you haven't been listening, I'll do a quick recap for you. We talked about what exactly a trust is, the vehicle that's used to carry it forward, what the parties are of a trust. It's basically a contract with certain terms and certain abilities, if you will. We also talked about how to make it protect property and how to bring value into your life and how to involve your family as far as putting them as a beneficiary and then making them know the administration of the trust, things of that nature. Now what we're going to do is talk about the tax aspect, because a lot of people are setting these vehicles up because of taxes. You know, if you could just go around and be yourself and do business however you wanted with no huge tax liability, well, then I'm sure that's what people would be doing, and a lot of attorneys would be out of business. Okay. Sadly, that's not the case. What the case is that you have many different regulations, restrictions, ratios, tax brackets, cross taxes, and you know all these different types of things. So the type of vehicle you use is important, but the type of business that you're doing or the nature of the vehicle, right, what you're using it for is really more important. And when you speak about trust, you have a wider range of options for what you can do, because the trust can do pretty much anything a corporation, an LLC, a person could do. So right then and there, you're triple your power, because corporation can't do what a sole proprietor can do, because otherwise they wouldn't have, they have certain rights and recognitions as a sole proprietor, right? But they don't have the same brackets, liabilities, duties, so on and so forth. Does that make sense? Reporting duties, stuff like that. So the trust can do a corporation's business, if you will. It can also, at the same time, do LLC business. It can do, you know, sole proprietor. The things that a trust can do, it can act in the capacities of all these different entities. It can also create all of these different types of entities. It can pass through money from the public to the private. That's where I left off. A lot of people think there's some sort of evasion going on, right? But the richest, smartest people in the world are structuring their lives in such a way to have as little tax liability as possible, which, again, the IRS has quoted. Like, you can quote the director when he says that there is not criminal for a taxpayer to structure their liabilities to be the lowest amount possible in by any legal channels, right? So that's exactly what a trust is able to do, and layers of trust, I should say, because one entity is a little difficult to work with if you're doing a whole bunch of different things. So again, to speak into what I said earlier, the nature of the entity you're using is important, but also what you're doing, what type of business you're conducting, or what you're doing with the money that's being received is really important as well. Okay, and that's where the taxes come in. If you can set yourself up in a way to where this domain of the trust, so maybe this trust encompasses all domains. It's going to hold real estate. It's going to invest in real estate. It's going to do private loans to people who need it, that are needy. It's going to, so it's in banking and real estate right off the bat. It's going to do charitable stuff, so it's in the nonprofit sector. It's going to do yada, 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 right? Well, there's certain vehicles that a trust works for in all of those domains. But it would be more efficient and less taxable to all of the parties involved if that trust would utilize another entity, right? Or another trust specifically formed and identified for that purpose with the IRS. So understanding the tax code is something that you will have to do if you're going to really, really start to administrate these types of things. But you don't need to know the whole thing. You just need to know a few pertinent things, right? And it's very easy to search and find on their website, irs.gov, what applies to your entities, okay? And again, you know, if you need to go consult with an attorney or somebody who specifically spent their life about taxes, well, so be it. Chances are they're going to know a lot of information that would apply to your trust, even if they don't know that's the vehicle you're using, okay? So, anyways, as far as the taxability is concerned, there is a lot of guru guys that are telling you, don't get an EIN number, don't do this, don't do that. I disagree. If you're going to set up a family trust and you have a lot of wealth to put into it, yeah, keep it private and use public trust to funnel money in after you pay the taxes on that. But use the public trust for your business in the public. It's that simple. There's a lot of people getting into trouble for what's called pure trust or scam trust or all these things that the IRS and the Southern Poverty Law Center, Defamation Leagues, and all these people are jumping onto like rabid wild dogs, okay? So if you don't understand what you're really doing and you don't understand that you might have a tax liability, but you can structure it to the lowest point possible, well, then you're going to have some problems more than likely, okay? All right, so now what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about property protection. This ties in with the trust, but I want to specifically go into the mechanics of layering. All right. The original trust is granted by the homeowner before they go into foreclosure. This is an example. They're granted the property full, free, and clear. Okay. And at that point, that trust creates another trust, and that trust manages the property. That trust, under the management agreement, has rights to sublease or subassign or whatever you want to call it to a company and to make third-party agreements as long as the original trust approves it first. There's some semblance of control, quality control. Okay. Now, at that point, you've got three layers, three parties that must be named and dealt with and pled to in any type of intrusive complaint or anything coming against the property. they could have their respective rights, duties, and first-in-line, first-in-time agreements. They could have liens set up between them, where one party has a certain amount of time to do something, and it doesn't do that for whatever reason, and the trust can now put a lien on the property, right? So now you've got layers of trust, you've got companies, you've got property, liens. Now you can also put a tenant, throw a tenant in one, build an outbuilding on the property, throw a tenant in there, or renter, right? Not only can you use that tenancy as a charitable donation if it's of a low enough value underneath the median rental income, or excuse me, rental charge for the area, you can support that claim or justify the claim that you're doing low-income housing for people. And at the same time, those tenants' rights will stand in the way of the foreclosure of the property as well. So there's your fourth layer. That's what I'm really talking about when I mean protecting property with trust. This can be done with a car. This can be done with, you know, a dog. There's really, really wealthy people that have set up trusts and named their dog as a beneficiary. And there's properties and estates that are being managed for dogs and animals right now in the United States. Claude, who was just on, for example, knows of a property in New Jersey where in such a case exactly happened like that. A rich old baroness left all of her stuff to a dog. Okay. What I'm trying to impact on you is that you can do anything with a trust that you can do with anything else. Your hand, your person, sole proprietorship, DBA, corporation, LLC, whatever, right? You're not restricted as long as you're keeping good records. This is how you beat the IRS and you beat other people. If you're keeping good records, not only of what the trust is doing in the trust business, but the agreements between any outside parties, distributions to any other parties, distributions to the beneficiaries, changes in the indenture of the trust. Any type of public records that the trust has filed. All of these things must be orderly and at hand at any time so that if you do get sued, you can go in. You can go in as a trustee for the trust. You don't need an attorney. You won't have the pro se bias in most cases. Okay, we spoke about that in our last show. And you're able to go in and counter-sue for multiple different things, not only because you have the first-in-line, first-in-time lien, if that's the case, but you can counter-sue for cost of suit to having to answer to motion to dismiss the fact that they named the wrong party in the first place, which is the original homeowner. You can also counter-sue for tortious interference. Most states have legislation, and obviously it's in the constitutions, whereby you can charge a party if they were given notice and you kept good records. You can charge them with interference in your business if they intentionally filed a suit to try to take the property, even though they know that it's not able to be taken because there's a first-in-time lien. That's frivolous right there. But attorneys will get away with it if you don't challenge it. Okay? There's lots and lots and lots of different things that you can do with these vehicles. There is no end in sight. All right? So, from taxes and property solutions and the trust stepping in front of the homeowners, now let's talk about what you can do to help other people. So a little bit of charity, okay? And this part of the show, I'm basically going to speak about what I plan to do and what I actually have in motion right now. I've set up a charitable trust. It's called Counter Foreclosure Experts. And the purpose of this trust, let's go through the parties real quick. I can actually display this publicly and give this information out on a restricted basis because I've been the trustee. So I have the powers and the duties to reveal what I deem to be necessary to get the word out and have other parties get interested in maybe working with us, and that's what I'm doing. So the grantor will remain unnamed and unknown. The trustee of that vehicle, Counter Foreclosure Experts, is myself. And the beneficiaries are going to be unnamed except for one of them. One of the beneficiaries is every state citizen of Texas who may be in some form of need or assistance. That's right. I just named every single person in Texas as a beneficiary of my trust. They have the perfect right to disclaim the benefits once they are aware of them. But until they are made aware through some sort of notice or distribution or something like that, for all intents and purposes, they remain a beneficiary of the trust. So this way, I can take some of the, it's a charitable trust, so more profits, I wouldn't say profits, more proceeds, if you will, are going to help people than they are coming into the vehicle itself. And then also our expenses are being recorded as well, so that we can offset those and show our charitability. So what we're doing basically is we're going around and we're stepping in front of foreclosures. We have a big success myself at Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths, which is my other trust entity, in teaching people to negotiate and defend themselves, and also to countersue and to, you know, do debt settlements and all sorts of different things for consumer credit and stuff like that. The purpose of this trust, obviously, is to go in and help people keep their houses from being sold out from under them, right? And then having their credit destroyed and not being able to go get another house, right, because of the foreclosure. It's similar to a bankruptcy. It's a real big hit on your credit. So the purpose of this trust is to go find people who qualify. We're only taking certain people that will lead to efficient business, right? We're still not trying to, we're not trying to tie an anchor around our neck. You have to help yourself first before you help other people. I spoke about that in previous shows. But what we're doing is we're going in, and the person who has already resigned to give up their house, I've already been foreclosed on, they've already filed the suit, they've already done the notice of default, the sale's already scheduled, I've got to get out of here, I don't know what I'm going to do, I'm just going to give up the keys and leave, right? Those are the people we're looking for. We're going to come in, because it's a little bit harder to find people who want to work with the business model that we want who haven't been right on the edge of foreclosure yet. It's not feasible for that person to try to stay in the house and fight it in a way that we would be able to help them, because we're not going to be going and representing people as an attorney and letting them keep the property in their own name. That's what we just did a whole hour on, trust and getting it out of your personal name. So I say that to say this. This trust is solely focused on people who have already resigned to get out of their house, but they don't want their credit ruined, and they want to have some sort of compensation for how shitty the situation was. So what we're doing is we're trying to establish a relationship with loan auditors, and the primary person would be certified forensic loan auditors, and Damien, who will be a guest on our show eventually. You know, he's a very busy person. What we're doing is we're setting up a partnership with those people so that we can use the audits, we can have the homeowner come sign the rights, titles, and interests in the property over to us, and the mortgage agreement over to us, so that their name is no longer an issue, right? The name of the party who has the rights under the mortgage in the original agreement that was signed, it's all been novated over to us. The title to the property that the homeowner has, any rights they have in that, is quit claimed over to us. Then they give us the keys in exchange for us giving them a small cash sum for them to get on with their life and just await the disposition of the case. So it seems a little one-sided until you realize that that person had to leave anyways. They probably had no chance, even if they got an attorney, of staying in that house or being able to pay the attorney's fees. And their credit would have been ruined, and they would have a real hard time even getting into an apartment after that. So the way we come in is we'll take the property out of their name. We challenge the credit reports to get the credit off and wiped out and erased. Then we go fight with we do an audit, and we go countersue the bank for the title as the holder of the title. We do a quiet title action, which is, you know, the bread and butter of CFLA. They do that a lot. And then from there, we're also countersuing for different types of things that, you know, we would need to do. And if we win, we take the title to the house and we keep it in the trust. We take all of the money that that person has ever paid and the value of the house. So say the house is worth $200,000 retail. $200,000 goes back to us for winning the case, right? And our agreements that are made with the homeowner and recorded in the public, so they feel secure, our agreements actually state that we're acting as a charitable trust in a charitable transaction, and we are returning the majority of the money. I haven't decided on a percentage. It probably will be a case-by-case basis, but more than likely it'll be an 80-20 split with 80% going back to the homeowner, or 70-30 with 70% going to the homeowner. or 60-40. It just depends on the expenses and how long the case goes. But the point is, a majority of the money will go back to that person. They will have free and clear credit in most cases, and they will not have any foreclosures on there either. And that person who was already leaving, you know, 6 months down the line or a year down the line, now they have the opportunity to take that money, do whatever they want with it, and restructure their life and learn their lesson from what happened before. Considering the fact that 9 out of 10 mortgages have fraud inherent and due right in them, we're going to have a pretty good time doing this. So this is my business plan for the latter half of 2016. It's part of my negotiation station, which is basically a concept that's allowing me to come up with ideas. It's sort of a think tank, if you will, and part of it is going around to different resorts and partnering with them to go green and sustainable and getting it to be popular with some of the most wealthy people in the world, you know, sustainability, if that makes sense. The other part is coming up with these types of ideas. All right. So that's what that's about, counter foreclosure experts. That's what we're doing with our trust. I hope that inspires you. Whether you're in foreclosure or about to be in foreclosure, whether you don't even own a property, all of these types of things are important to know. And I hope it inspires you not only to do some of these things yourself, but also to work with us if you're interested. Okay, I know there's a lot of people on here that listen from LinkedIn, a lot of people that listen from Facebook, and also Plaid. You know, I haven't forgot about you guys either. I really appreciate you, and we want you to get in contact with us. Our channels are open. You can Google our name, Jordan Michael Askew, Corey Stevens, Piercing the Veil, all of these things, Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths. Everything is available online. A simple Google search will pull you to all of our sites. Okay. So what we'll do now is we'll go to another commercial break. We're just going to replay one of our commercials here while I take a little break and drink some water because I've been talking to you for the past hour. And when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about what we're doing next week and go from there.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debt? The Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
All right, listeners, welcome back. This is like the third break that we've taken, but I am flying solo, if you haven't been listening so far. Corey is in Italy having a fantastic time. We sort of took a risk to see if his Skype would work. It appears he doesn't have service. And Damian had a last-minute scheduling conflict. Again, he's a pretty busy guy in some negotiations right now. So in lieu of the foreclosure topic, what we've been talking about is property protection through trusts and wealth generation. And what exactly is a trust? Some of the misconceptions about these types of things. A lot of the guru tax guys and all these people that are saying things that really aren't necessary for trusts. A lot of those things were discussed, and you'll be able to listen to this show if you're just joining us. So for those of you who have been listening, thank you so much. There have been a few hijinks during the show that happens from time to time. It's just a given with the nature of the stuff we're talking about. I hope that I have kept you entertained to a point where you're able to assimilate some of this important information. And I wanted to give some notice before we go to the end of the show that next week is up in the air. I'm considering some really important topics, and I'm negotiating with some schedules with a few guests that are super, super busy, so I don't really know for sure, but I will be giving an update midweek through our social media, which could be LinkedIn, Facebook, stuff like that, Plaid, what have you. But it will be a powerful topic and or a powerful guest, I can promise you that. I've got a few things in my sights regarding some recent events, and it's going to be very interesting however it shows up. So I just wanted to give you good faith notice, and thank you very much. for listening to the show. Again, I wanted to remind you guys, we'll take this moment here to plug us. We have a GoFundMe, right? I'm paying for this out of my pocket because I love the world and I love sharing information, and I really feel that what we have to say is valuable and what we're bringing is valuable. So we have a GoFundMe. It's very simple. It's www.gofundme.com/piercethevail. All one word, pierce the veil. If you're listening to the show, hop on that site, please. Give us a dollar or two, $1, $2, anything to get some momentum and keep that going would really, really help. We appreciate it. And, you know, if you have any suggestions for topics or if you want to be a guest and you have some sort of qualifications that you want to state, which is not much, if you have a valuable information or life experience or something like that that you feel the world would need to know that wouldn't know otherwise, you qualify, okay? You can go to our website, the radio website, www.bbsradio.com/piercingtheveil. It's our show page. You can find us on Facebook and like us and share us. It's facebook.com/piercingtheveil86. Okay? No, not Piercing the Veil, the band. Those guys are awesome. But Piercing the Veil 86. On LinkedIn, you can find me under Jordan Michael Askew. Okay? And so without any further ado, I'm going to wrap up this show. I've been talking for a while, sort of in all honesty and good faith, run out of more information to elaborate on this topic. And I hope that you've enjoyed the show. Next week will be a profound show. We'll have it, either Damien, if he can come back on, or the other guests and topics I was talking about. And I believe Corey should be back in time for that as well. So love you guys. Have a great day. Have a great life. Look within. And we'll see you next time on the next episode of Piercing the Veil. Thank you very much.